Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And, Jim, we have some good news. First of all, yesterday at the Supreme Court, it seems like neither side really wants to punt this issue down the road, and it doesn't seem like the justices are really inclined to do that either, so that's happy. The other good news is that in the early goings today, it seems like our very, very good friend, Justice Anthony Kennedy, seems rather skeptical in his questions about the constitutionality of the individual mandate, so let's hope that little tea leaf is going well. So since today is officially individual mandate day at the Supreme Court, we decided to make the good martini something you mentioned yesterday, and that's this video by American Crossroads, the group headed by Karl Rove and involving a lot of other folks, of course, about how this really would look at the Supreme Court if Barack Obama of 2008 was debating President Obama of 2012. Here's just a little snippet of that.
It's a plan that asks everyone to take responsibility for meeting this challenge. Everybody, including employers and individuals.
If a mandate was the solution, we could try that to solve homelessness by mandating everybody buy a house.
A system where every American bears responsibility for owning health insurance.
What are you going to do about it? Are you going to fine them? Are you going to garnish their wages?
So there you go, Jim. The president in 2008 vigorously opposing Hillary Clinton's call for an individual mandate. And then lo and behold, come 2009 when it's time for actual legislation and he's got a very compliant Democratic Congress, he's all for it because, well, he didn't want to let a good crisis go to waste, to quote one of his former aides. And not only good to have out there that the president sees the reason why this is not a good idea, but to actually have him debating himself is pretty fun.
It is, Greg. And, you know, maybe we misjudged this guy Obama from 2008. He doesn't seem so bad now. Unfortunately, I'm just hoping that the Obama campaign of 2012 runs attack ads against the Barack Obama of 2008, because obviously Barack Obama made one of the most eloquent critics of the individual mandate. Now, this is always worth noting whenever someone points out that the Heritage Foundation once thought the individual mandate was a good idea, Newt Gingrich, Mitt Romney, et cetera. The argument was that compared to single-payer Hillary care, an individual mandate would be a way of promoting the conservative value of everybody kicking in some, paying their own weight. You have to be responsible to pay for expenses you have. But look, in the interim, Obama's whole objection to that ad is based on the idea of, come on, you're just punishing poor people who can't afford it as is. The constitutional issue has kind of come to the front and to the forefront, and that's what is at stake before the Supreme Court today. Can the federal government make you buy something? You know, if you choose not to buy health insurance, is that an economic activity that the Congress has the authority to regulate under the Commerce Clause? And I think that it's great to see these skepticism coming forward. I think that when you saw the discussion in 93, 94, later when Mitt Romney enacted his version, the constitutional question of was this a legitimate constitutional power of the federal government was not at the forefront. And I think it's a good thing to have it in the forefront. If Kennedy's a skeptic, it's really great news, but I've learned not to read too much into the questioning. So, it's not over until the fat lady sings, oh, yay, oh, yay, oh, yay, the court has decided.
We'll find out in about 3 months or a little less time, but early indications give us at least a little bit of reason for optimism. On to martini number two now, and you mentioned Mitt Romney in passing with his previous support of the individual mandate, certainly in the Massachusetts health care plan. Well, Mr. Romney has also found himself in a debate with the outgoing president of Russia, Dmitry Medvedev, you know, the one who will take this information and transmit it to Vladimir, from yesterday's open mic event with President Obama. Mitt Romney, as any good Republican would, jumping on that comment and saying, look, this is a situation where the president's essentially promising to go easy on somebody who's been a pretty staunch geopolitical adversary for a long time, not just in the Cold War era, but look what we're trying to do with Iran and so many other bad actors on the world stage around the world. And it seems like Russia's constantly defending these people, along with the Chinese. So for the president to promise to go easy after the election is not good for American national security interests. Medvedev shoots back that that's a line from Hollywood, chief geopolitical foe. We're not in the 1970s anymore. This is 2012. So, Jim, I don't know if a Russian leader scoffing at a Republican carries quite the benefit for the Republican candidate that it used to, but can't hurt.
Yeah, this is, it's bad news in the sense that I think that probably would be better for everyone involved if Dmitry Medvedev kept his nose out of American politics.
Having said that, hearing a Russian president come out and say, you have nothing to fear from your president making us assurances. You have no problem. You know, there's nothing to fear here. I'm just waiting for him to bang his shoe on the table to emphasize that point. The only way this could go better for Romney is if he had been denounced as a capitalist running dog or something like that. If you feel like Barack Obama has been too tough on Russia, well, then I guess you know you're really looking forward to that second term. If you feel like, look, that all of this talk is kind of overlooking just the inherently adversarial perspective that the Russian government has, particularly under the control of Vladimir Putin, who is getting all this transmitted to him, then you need a change in direction. And I one of the things that's kind of amazing about this is the Democrats are cheerfully pointing out this comment from Medvedev. I mean, I guess we shouldn't be surprised to see Democrats approvingly citing comments from Russian leaders. There's kind of always been that kinship there, you could say, going back to those bad 1970s. I think of Jimmy Carter being totally shocked that the Soviets would invade Afghanistan. How could they ever? But again, we see this same kind of approach of naivete, this kind of approach of just believing, you know, look, we're going to have a reset button. I guess after the election, Obama will hit the reset button on his own policy and will be even more out to placate the Russians, even more desperate to bend over backwards to make them happy and ignoring the role that, look, when it comes to Sudan, when it comes to Syria, when it comes to Iran, when it comes to North Korea, look, they often define their interests in opposition to ours. And they're always the ones who can be counted on to hold up any serious UN action. And they have no problem selling their arms to anyone who will buy them. And look, Russia is not a good actor on the world stage. Why are we trying to win them over? Why are we trying to act like, oh, if we're nice enough to them, they'll be nice back to us? It's baffling to see the way that the debate is going. I still have faith in the American people that we don't feel warm and fuzzy towards folks called Medvedev or Putin or anything like that. We'll see what happens. They can say this is Hollywood, Greg, but I'm just hearing the theme to Hunt for Red October in my head right now.
I'm thinking of the Rocky IV soundtrack personally, but either way, it all works out well. And the other aspect of this, in a probably more bad martini type of way, is Obama's pathetic reaction to getting caught on the open mic, promising more flexibility after the election should he win. And, you know, his comment was that, well, you know, I have to be able to consult with my military leaders and Pentagon officials and members of Congress, because, of course, Jim, he can't do that now before the election.
Yeah, it's only a couple of days, right? Oh, no, wait. Just how long is the decision-making loop for this administration? You know, I've heard the metaphor of, you know, turning an aircraft carrier is, you know, it needs some time. It can't just turn on a dime. But you know, just how long, how much prep work will any policy changes take? Yeah, I don't buy that excuse at all. So, you know, what do we expect from this administration?
Exactly. Well, we know what we expect from liberals and their sensitivity towards conservatives. We certainly saw it in the untimely death of Andrew Breitbart. Now we see it at a time when you would think there would be not too much criticism, but of course there is. Dick Cheney got a new heart, and that's an outrage, Jim. On the Today Show, Matt Lauer asking their chief medical health correspondent, Dr. Nancy Snyderman, about this. She used to have a show before Obamacare passed, an hour every day, shilling for that. So, you know, she's very unbiased. And the funny part here, of course, is that they preface this entire piece by saying he didn't get any special treatment, but he probably shouldn't have got one anyway. Here we go.
People say it's unlikely that the 71-year-old jumped the line. But nonetheless, this has raised a lot of ethical questions, moral questions, about whether the vice president, in fact, should have received his heart against ahead of other people, and raising the question, how old is too old to receive such a precious transplant?
This could probably also be a really bad martini, Jim, for two reasons. Number one, apparently Dick Cheney doesn't deserve a new heart because he's a conservative. And secondly, if you're 71, you don't deserve a new heart. So those of you older folks who were worried about rationing from Obamacare, no worries, no worries. People just want you to die because you don't deserve a new organ if you're out of a certain age.
Do they detect any contradiction in these two messages? Death panels aren't real. And Cheney shouldn't have gotten a heart because he didn't deserve one. I just throw up my hands. I'm just going to quote the Ace of Spades, who made the observation. You know, we really should be commending Vice President Cheney for his self-restraint. We all know his reputation. It's not like he had to wait for a dead donor, you know. You know, I'd like to take you hunting, my friend. How's your heart feeling? You know, let me just aim carefully there. Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm glad Vice President Cheney's around. Obviously, the joke I heard yesterday is everyone kind of wondering, so what if it was a liberal donor? Will we suddenly start seeing mood shifts in Cheney? Will he suddenly, you know, will he suddenly become a bleeding heart liberal? So anyway, all kinds of good, bad puns. Glad that Vice President Cheney's on the mend. And
Yeah, it spotlights the good issue of you know, potential rationing of care under Obamacare, then all the better.
Yeah, apparently in their world, if you're conservative, the waiting list doesn't matter, even if you've been on there longer than most people are by average. But if there's somebody else they'd rather have see get a heart, well, tough luck there, Mr. Vice President. I'm glad the real world didn't work that way. Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.